Yes, I have an employee that has not reported for work today, and highly unlike her. I've tried calling her home number, I've tried calling cell phone, and can't get a hold of her. What can we do about that? Can somebody go by and check on them?
I had absolutely no idea what I was walking into. I saw hands not connected to a body. I went in the master bathroom, and the only thing I saw were two tubs with what appeared to be body parts liquefying.
Get killing knives, quick, multiple. Get carving knives to make small pieces. Get sledgehammer, crush bones. Bring blender and food grinder, grind meat.
The killer put Lisa's body parts in one, and he put Jules Sr.'s in the other. And then he covered them with a corrosive substance and left them there to liquefy into some sort of diabolical stew of human remains.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Joel Michael Guy, guilty.
My name is Angela Crane, and Joel and Lisa Guy were my parents. I wasn't prepared to speak today. It's like for 4 years, I felt like I've pushed it down, like it's not actually happening. But it's real, and they're gone. And Dad was my best friend, and I'll never get to hear his laugh again.
I mourn for my dad, and Noah, I keep talking about Lisa. I mourn terribly for my dad, I do, but I grieve and rage for Lisa. I rage for her from the mother's point of view. I cry for her because I wonder if when she realized the love of her life, the only son she had, the child that she gave her entire life to, was about to murder her. I wonder if at that moment when her heart was broken, did she even fight?
On November 28, 2016, West Knox County, Tennessee deputies were dispatched to a standard welfare check. A woman by the name of Jennifer Whitehead, an accounting manager with Jacobs Engineering in Oak Ridge, called to report that one of her employees had not shown up to work. Lisa Guy, 55, was an ideal and beloved employee, and it was unlike her not to call or not show up, especially since there was a retirement lunch with coworkers scheduled for her that day. Having been a homemaker for most of her life, Lisa had gotten a job in the accounting department of Jacobs Engineering in order to make a little side money so she could financially assist her 28-year-old son, Joel. Lisa's husband was Joel Guy Sr., and they had been happily married for 31 years. Jennifer had tried to call Lisa numerous times, but received no answer. She said a bad feeling had come over her, and she knew that something was gravely wrong. Knox County Sheriff's Office Detective Jeremy McCord was one of the first deputies who was dispatched to the welfare check. When they arrived at Lisa and Joel Sr.'s home, they saw both of their vehicles parked in the driveway. After he peeked through glass panes on the front door, he saw groceries and grocery bags strewn all over the foyer area. He walked around the house. The back door to the home was missing its doorknob, and he noted a, quote, really odd chemical smell. He described what he encountered when he walked inside the Golden View Lane home, quote, it was the most horrific thing I've ever encountered in police work in my life. They showed up to the front door, and they, no answer, no knock. Both cars are parked in the driveway. Watching the trial, he says that usually that's not a good sign. So what happened to Guy Sr. and Lisa? On September 28th, just a week ago, the trial began for their son, Joel Guy Jr. The prosecutor, Leslie Nocios, laid out the state's theory. Joel Guy Jr. murdered his parents for money. Are we sure that no one else could have killed Lisa and Guy Sr.? How could a son kill his parents like that? Well, in a major bombshell, Junior had planned the entire thing in a notebook, gory detail by gory detail. Investigators found the notebook in the bedroom he was staying in at his parents' house. So that kind of takes away the whole, quote, it was not premeditated defense.
Or any type of self-defense defense that he could come up with.
No, seriously. Because the defense in the opening day on the 28th, the defense literally more or less opened with, well, thanks for being here. They had nothing. At first, they tried to say, well, it's not necessarily his notebook. But then there was a handwriting expert who quickly debunked that attempt. So at that point, it was just kind of, well, thanks for being here. We're just going to sit down and have this go to trial. The state wasn't seeking the death penalty or offering him a plea deal for admitting it. They were seeking life with a chance of parole after 51 years. Times two, so he never would have seen the light of day to begin with.
He's so sick that he wanted the death penalty.
He did. He did actually request the death penalty. Initially, at the beginning of the trial, he said he didn't even want a lawyer. He just flat out requested the death penalty. But the state just said, nope, we're not seeking it.
I wonder if he's going to be one of those people that commit suicide while he is in jail.
I would say he would be at a high risk. And in the state of Tennessee, a conviction on first-degree murder charges triggers automatic sentencing of life in prison for each count. So as far as the prosecution was concerned, this is pretty much like an open and shut case. This entire trial, because of the gruesomeness and just heinousness of this crime, most of the trial was just introduction of evidence. There were 27 witnesses called.
And a video, too. Many videos.
We had chest cam videos from the initial welfare check. We had videos from CCTV footage of Walmart, gas stations. I mean, it was vast. And because the crime scene was the home, the crime scene itself spanned both floors of the home. It wasn't just isolated to one particular room. So this was a massive, massive case in terms of just sheer physical evidence. All of this transpired around Thanksgiving, and here's the thing about this particular case. I don't recall it happening originally. I have never even heard of this case until it popped up this last week, and I watched the whole trial, all 5 days of the trial, start to finish.
It's a train wreck.
It's so awful. It's
and sad.
It's so incredibly sad. So it all transpired around Thanksgiving. And family members who testified at the trial reported that they were a very close-knit family. Well, I should say everyone else was close-knit except for Joel Jr. He was completely self-isolating. He didn't get along with his siblings. They never spoke outside of family gatherings. Like, one of his sisters said that she only spoke to him at holidays. The entire family came together for Thanksgiving. Everyone testified that he was acting very odd at Thanksgiving dinner. He was more talkative than usual. He was playing with his nephews, engaging with his siblings. He even started trying to give some of his childhood toys to his nephews.
You know something is wrong when someone who is not normal starts acting normal.
Right. Lisa and Guy Sr. have been paying for Guy Jr.'s way his entire life. He had taken courses at Louisiana State University for 9 years.
What was his major, do you know?
He said that he wanted to be a plastic surgeon, but he would not consistently go to school. In multiple interviews with his roommate at his apartment in Baton Rouge, his roommate said that he would stay sometimes days at a time in his room on the computer. And you know, good things were not happening in that room.
God, no.
He couldn't or wouldn't hold jobs. He'd never actually had a single job in his entire life, except for a multiple unpaid internships, which usually ended pretty quickly. His parents just always paid his way. What pushed this all into motion? Is that they were planning to redo the will and remove Joel Jr. from it entirely. They were planning to cut him off. And Robin White, Joel Guy Sr.'s sister, testified that Joel and Lisa had told her that they were retiring, selling their house, moving into their dream home, and cutting Joel Jr. off financially as a whole. And they planned to do this at Christmas when the whole family was together. What's really sad is that Lisa was working for Jacobs, the engineering company. The only reason that she was even working was to give her whole paycheck to her son. They had no need for her to even work at all. They were actually a very, very well-to-do family. She solely worked to support her child.
Because he wouldn't get a job?
Because he wouldn't get a job.
Wow.
Now, according to the prosecution, all of that is exactly why he killed his parents. Somehow, before Thanksgiving, he had gotten wind of their plan and decided to brutally murder them. And when we say brutal, that's putting it lightly. According to prosecutors at the trial, this particular crime scene was in the rarest of rare categories for crime scenes in terms of how graphic it was. So what exactly happened that day? Saturday after Thanksgiving, Lisa Guy left the home to go to Walmart and PetSmart. She left Walmart at 12:18 p.m. after buying some groceries. Later on CCTV, Joel Jr. was also at the same Walmart around 3:35 p.m. buying knives and chemicals that he would later use to dissolve the bones. While Lisa was at PetSmart, Joel returned home, and he attacked his father first. Joel Guy Sr. was stabbed over 42 times and had multiple defensive wounds. He was stabbed so viciously that there were 12 marks on his ribs, ranging from scratches to completely severing them. There was sharp force trauma to his lungs, liver, and kidneys. A wound to his shoulder was so severe that a fragment of the knife actually broke down deep within his muscle tissue.
Ooh.
Joel Sr.'s hands were severed at the wrist. His arms were severed from his body at the shoulder blade. His legs were removed from the hip, and his right foot was removed from the ankle.
What kind of monster?
The prosecutor also said that there was a very fierce struggle and that he definitely fought for his life. After he was murdered, his clothes were removed and placed into a bloody pile. Somewhere around here is when prosecutors and investigators believe that Lisa Guy came home. She came home at some point after he was killed, and she was carrying her Walmart groceries in through the foyer, and they believe that this is where and when she was murdered. Blood evidence actually points to her having been murdered on the stairs, as there was considerable blood splatter, and perishable groceries were strewn all around the foyer. That's one of the first instances on that welfare check where investigators knew that something wasn't quite right, because he said that he saw milk and like breakfast meat, breakfast sausage, laying in the foyer.
Oh, like complete perishable.
Perishable, complete perishables.
Oh God, I bet that smelled great too.
Joel Jr. attacked his mother. Lisa was stabbed 31 times. And of those 31 wounds, there were 21 severe injuries. The attack severed 9 of her ribs, and there were several stab wounds to her butt.
What?
He cut her clothes from her body after she was murdered, and that clothing was also left in a pile. Her legs were severed below the knee, her arms were severed at the shoulder, her head was removed from her spine after a considerable amount of blunt force trauma was applied to her neck. With both of his parents dead, Joel Guy Jr. then started chopping up the bodies for disposal. Lisa Guy's severed head was found in a pot of boiling liquid on the kitchen stove. Joel Guy Sr.'s severed hands were found upstairs on the floor of their bedroom. The couple's severed torsos and remaining limbs were in 2 45-gallon tubs covered with corrosive substance and left to liquefy. Guy Jr. had attempted to use hydrogen peroxide and various other drain cleaners in order to, what his notebook referred to as, wash away the DNA evidence. He had also hooked up a hose to the master bedroom shower and was using other chemicals to try to speed up decomposition. Dr. Amy Hawes, who performed autopsies on both Lisa and Guy Sr. while working for the Regional Forensic Center, testified that the couple likely died within a few seconds to a few minutes.
Not to mention that I was really worried about how slow their death would be, especially with stab wounds, you mm-hmm. know? And we've heard a lot of, well, there's a lot of instances where there's terrorist attacks with stabbings.
Yep.
And it takes a lot. It takes a lot to kill somebody. There's a lot of survivor stories of people being almost stabbed to death, mm-hmm. right? Where people have, like, survived 65 stab wounds.
Yeah, it's crazy how much a human body can actually handle.
In this instance, I'm grateful. I'm so grateful they didn't survive very long to have to suffer.
I mean, it's just so heinous on so many levels, but if that gives you any indication of just how vicious and hate-filled this attack was.
He was very motivated, and it's disgusting. Who could kill their parents?
It's so vile. You know, we have like the Menendez brothers and so many other cases. People shoot their parents, you know, an argument, whatever. This was a very, 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 very personal attack.
Beyond personal. This goes into a very deep set of mental illness mm-hmm. that was completely overlooked by probably his parents and yeah. the rest of his family. Because they're basically saying in this story that he was weird by being normal at Thanksgiving.
Right.
Okay, if that doesn't tell you something has been ignored his whole life, and everyone's like, we never saw this coming, mm-hmm. and then it came, and it happened, and now there's dead people. You know, I think that the public needs to be a little bit more aware of the signs. I feel so bad.
Even his siblings said he was not normal. He didn't look normal. He didn't act normal. His roommate from Louisiana State University, they went to high school together. They had known each other for almost 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And he had never once met Guy Sr., his dad.
What?
He had only met Lisa, his mother, one time. Best friends. From high school. For 15 years, he'd never met his dad, ever. In fact, what's extra fucked up is that he didn't even know that he had siblings.
What?
Yeah, his best friend of 15 years didn't even know that he had siblings.
You know what's really sick is that they pulled the search history off his computer, too. Mm-hmm. And it was all about how he could dispose of his parents' bodies.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was obsessed. He had it in his mind that he was going to be carried for the rest of his life.
Yep, completely. Investigators, once they started processing the crime scene, they found that notebook that was in the spare bedroom upstairs in his parents' house. So naturally, the next day, Joel Guy Jr. was arrested on November 29th at his apartment in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Upon his arrest, police found pieces of paper from that notebook and a meat grinder in his trunk.
A meat grinder?
A meat grinder.
What the hell are you going to do with that?
I think, what did he do with that?
Oh, no.
So the prosecution at the trial argued that this was a premeditated crime for two primary reasons. One, a notebook being found in his room upstairs, which we just talked about. And two, also the fact that Michelle Tyler, Joel's half-sister, saw the blue drums that would eventually hold her father's remains in the back of Junior's car on Thanksgiving.
Oh, no, we're going to go that far?
Yeah. So apparently her washing machine went out. And so she was having problems and she was coming, you know, to her parents' house to do some of her laundry. And she walked by Joel Jr.'s car and saw those 45-gallon drums in the backseat of his car. He had planned this.
Oh, what a sicko.
He is just absolutely putrid. Now, the notebook is something that the trial spent a considerable amount of time with. And I've actually never really seen anything like this before. Imagine you watch a lot of Forensic Files, you watch a lot of crime TV shows, right? Of how to plan the perfect murder, how to get away with murder. And that's literally what he did. He sat down and he started researching evidence processing, DNA, how to hide things, the best way to dispose of bodies. And he went through 2.5 pages of notes on what he was supposed to do. So we're just going to read a little bit from his journal right now.
And this is some good college education that he wasted.
All right, and this is coming directly from his journal that police obtained. Get killing knives, quiet and multiple. Get carving knives to make small pieces. Get a sledgehammer to crush bones. Bring blender and food grinder to grind meat. Get bleach to denature proteins. Get plastic Ben for denaturation process. Does not matter where they're killed, just get rid of bloody spots to prevent evidence of time of death. And then in parentheses, not the mattress or couches.
He knew where not to kill them.
Get rid of the bodies inside the house. There and my DNA is already there. Kill him with the knife. Clean up mess from him before she gets home. Kill her with knife. Place her in shower. Turn on hot water. Turn on hot water and point it at her to get rid of forensics. Remove her clothes and take them with me for disposal. Place him in plastic Ben and use it to get him into the upstairs bathroom. Cut off his arm and plant his flesh under her fingernails. Place her hand with his DNA so that his DNA is not washed away from the shower. Use sodium hydroxide to destroy his soft tissue and soften bones for transport. Baste once every hour to accelerate. Flush sodium hydroxide down the toilet. Wash out Ben with handheld shower head and then direct handheld into toilet to flush everything down. Douse killing rooms with bleach. Place hair curler with flammable paper and flammable containers of gasoline in 4 locations in the home. His killing room, her killing room, his bathroom, her bathroom. Wipe down areas near killing rooms and bathrooms. Turn heaters up to 90 degrees to melt fingerprints and dry everything. Set her phone to send me a text message late Sunday to prove that I was in Baton Rouge and she was, quote, alive. Leave through the front door and wipe down doorknobs. Timer for flammable set for Friday at 10 a.m. Sunlight masks fire, but not smoke. Everyone is at work at that time, so they can't report it. So that was his list. A couple things in the middle as far as how to break down the bodies was missing, a couple points there, but that is 95% of his first 2 pages of his notebook. Also found in the notebook is he decided to be a little bit of an accountant, and he had a full page dedicated to his parents' financial assets.
Oh.
Her assets included $500,000, and then in parentheses, possibly more.
Possibly more?
Possibly more.
He's really counting on it.
And he said, with him missing and dead, I get the whole thing. All her other assets are joint. Goes to him if missing, unknown if he's dead. And then for his assets, he's referring to his mother and father here. So his dad's assets, and then parentheses, Knoxville house, includes all joint property if missing. When he gets all joint property, he also gets joint debt. Homeowner's insurance possibly, but probably worthless after fire. May owe $100,000. And then they also had another home. And they had that home appraised at $400,000. And then said worthless with Renee on property. So this was so premeditated that he actually sat down and took the time to plan it out moment by moment, minute by minute, how he would try to get rid of all of the forensic evidence, the DNA evidence, the blood, how he was going to set the home literally on fire to burn down the house and all of this like gruesomeness in it, and then how he was going to somehow get all of their assets, the life insurance policies for each of them, the money for both of their homes. He even tries to take out amounts for their debt. So to say that this was premeditated, I mean, it's a pretty, pretty big given. There's really no defense against that whatsoever. However, the defense did try. Their one lone attempt was that there was no DNA evidence or fingerprints found on the pages of the notebook. And so they suggested that there may be a flicker of doubt that it didn't belong to him.
A flicker of doubt?
Yeah, I mean, that just, no. That was dismissed pretty quickly.
I just feel like there's no doubt based on everything.
There is zero doubt. And again, like I said earlier, 27 witnesses were called to testify in the case that only, in the trial that only lasted 5 days. So I would say that the motive of this has been clearly established. I mean, it was all written down. And he really thought that he would be the only person to get their money. I just can't believe that he really thought that he would be the only person who would get that money. Like, fuck the other kids, right? Fuck everyone else. His half-siblings. His dad, Guy Sr., was married before and had children from a previous marriage. So they weren't going to get anything.
He was going to take them out, probably.
Yeah, can you imagine had he gotten away with it?
Oh, he would start knocking them off one by one, like, if he found out.
I wonder if his other sister, who was there for Thanksgiving with her and her children, I wonder if they were in danger.
But look at how they listed the obituary. You know, they had the obituary for both the parents, right? Which is incredibly sad, mm-hmm. and very, like, heartbreaking. And as I'm reading the list, they listed him first as one of the survivors. Before the sister. And I'm like, are we kidding right now? He shouldn't even be on there.
No.
Oh, it's just something that makes me so mad. It just made me mad. I was like, if that was like my brother who killed my sis, like, mm-hmm. you know, killed my parents, and then they listed him before me on the obituary, I'd be like, are we kidding?
Mm-hmm. He did all of this because he thought he would be getting somewhere and cashing out at around $600,000.
Oh, you know, there's some delusion that he's living. Clearly, if he believed that he was, one, going to get away with us, two, think that everything's going to go to his plan.
He is so delusional. Midway through his trial, he tried to basically say he wanted his insurance money.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He tried to make a claim to it. He tried to claim his stake in his parents' death.
In the middle of the trial. And interesting part is that Tennessee has what they call a slayer statute. If you commit a heinous crime, you can't profit from it. It's coming into play in this particular trial because he can now not get any money to him that was left in the will. Because don't forget, when his parents had not changed the will yet. He was still in the will. But because he decided to commit this horrible, horrible crime, he gets nothing. He gets nothing but a life lived out in prison. It's just horrifically, horrifically sad. And the full trial, again, it lasted 5 days. The full trial is available on YouTube. I highly, highly suggest that you watch it. It's really interesting to watch a lot of experts at play, describe things. Dr. Hawes was particularly fascinating. She's the one who works for the forensics lab and what they had to do to get a lot of the evidence out of the home. Lisa Guy's head had been boiling on the stove in over about 90 degree home for hours, probably over even 24 hours. So you can imagine what that was like. So what happens when you're an investigator or a forensics technician and you need to collect that evidence? Same for the tubs in the upstairs master bathroom. He had dismembered them and basically threw, like a Rob Zombie movie, all of the random limbs and body parts into a little tub. Two tubs, and started pouring Drano, hydrogen peroxide, bleach, corrosive liquids over them to get them to melt. And per investigators, melt they did. It was a literal, diabolical stew is what one of the detectives called it.
A diabolical stew of human remains.
Yeah, of human remains. And so they actually had to partially drain the tubs of the liquid through the bathroom sink in order to remove and literally sift out what they could bag and tag.
God, I don't want that job. I do not want that job. And that's so sad and sick and twisted.
It's just so incredibly sad. And oh my God, I'm not necessarily, you know, a lot of us who are into true crime and whatnot are, I would say, pretty desensitized. These victim impact statements killed me when it had Gaia Sr., his sister, his older sister testified, his children all testified, and I was just sobbing. Like, I literally had tears in my eyes. It's just so sad because can you imagine having a wonderful Thanksgiving with your parents and then 2 days later, this happened to them?
When we think of body parts and stock pots, I think of the Granny Ripper. I think of
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Jeffrey Dahmer. Yeah. Jeffrey Dahmer is a big one. And when I think of people in bathtubs, like human remains in bathtubs and acid, I think of the acid bath killer. You know, this is different. This is different than a serial killer, you guys. This is different. Why? Because he didn't kill multiple other people. He killed for the intent of money.
Yep.
He was a sociopath.
I want to know what's wrong with him. And the interesting part is because he didn't fight anything, you know, he was just like, I want the death penalty. Because the prosecution didn't have to prove that he was sane, they never did a full psychological like profile on him for the purpose of the trial. No. So no one knows what's actually wrong with him. He clearly, from every single person around him, suffers from extreme mental illness. And then we get into the not criminally responsible discussion, which a lot of people have actually brought up on this case.
Yeah.
I'm going to shout out to a podcast called Crime Labs, and they just released an episode on the killer, the Greyhound bus killer in Canada on bus 1170. Singularly, it is one of the best podcast episodes I've ever listened to in my entire life. What you don't know is that he was severely schizophrenic. If you recall, he stabbed a man, stabbed him over 100 times, decapitated him on a Greyhound bus, and then there was a standoff for hours, and he ate like a third of his organs. And he was found not criminally responsible, and he's back out in public now. Like, he's back out in life. He went to a mental hospital. He was apparently unmedicated when that happened. He's now medicated and changed his name, and he's back in society. So is there any sort of redemption or fixing people like this?
For me, honestly, I don't want somebody who's capable of doing that because of a mental lapse to be around me.
I would just also like to make it clear there's no chance in hell that that guy Jr. is ever, ever, ever going to be out in public again. You know, he was found guilty. He has 2 automatic life sentences, but there's no chance that he's going to be out ever. He will die in prison unless he kills himself there.
I think I honestly strongly believe that based on him wanting the death penalty, he's probably going to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. He's not going to, you know, he's going to be manhandled in jail, right?
Yes. So that is it for this case, guys. It's a very short episode, but I just couldn't believe it. I don't know how this one went off my radar. It has been a very long time since I have sat down and watched a whole trial.
I turned you on to it.
Mm-hmm.
I found it. The trial started and stuff. And I was like, Robin, this is crazy. How can we not talk about this? Because my mind is blown of how messed up this is.
Yeah, I could not believe it.
I was like, look at the photo of this guy. He looks crazed.
And the photo is what did it.
He fell out of something off of the set of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Mm-hmm. He looks like
Frankenfurter.
Yeah, that too. But he also looks like the guy with the little hand from Scary Movie.
Oh my God, no.
If he had brown hair.
Oh, that guy freaks me out. I'm not going to lie to you.
Let's do our housekeeping. We're doing housekeeping on the back end this week, guys. You can find us at wesawthedevil.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at wesawthedevil. And give us some love on our Instagram. That's wesawthedevilpodcast. Also, we are in October, guys. And what does October mean?
Halloween.
It is October for our Patreon. And if you sign up for our Patreon at any month, you want to sign up this month. You can check us out if you like the show, want to support it. Please hit us up on Patreon. That's patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. And again, we have really cool postcards this month, especially with a special horror movie tie-in. And we'll send you a postcard for the case of the month. We'll send you true crime goodies. You get ad-free episodes and exclusive content. So let's quickly talk about schedules. As promised, we have a Lori Vallow episode coming out tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone has asked for us to go back to basics and do the what we know now.
What we know now.
Episode and kind of doing a primer episode. So if you have an aunt or a grandmother or a friend who you just really want to get into the Lori Vallow case and you need a easy to understand primer that gives you all the information.
Boy, do we have the episode for you.
Boy, do we have the episode for you coming tomorrow. So that is coming. And then later this week, you guys are getting a threefer, not a twofer, a threefer this week. And later this week, we will have our final episode of Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate.
Ascension has arrived.
We're leaving our shoes behind.
We are.
Our Nikes.
So it's going to be a busy week. Again, thank you so much for listening. Hit us up on Patreon and join in the Halloween fun. Also, we have a secret, like, Santa type of thing going on with our Patreon.
Halloween-y.
For Halloween. So we have a lot of stuff going on right now, guys. Thank you for listening. We love you.
Until next crime.